Ukmaboyim Parshas Achremois Kedoshim. We will be looking tonight at the Ezus Hashem and a topic in Parshas Kedoshim. In Parashat Tet, Pasuk Tezvon, famous word with a famous drasha. B'tzedek tishpoiz amtsecho. B'tzedek tishpoiz amtsecho literally translates as B'tzedek, righteousness, justness. Tishpoi Zamitecho, you should be judging your nation. And Rashi indeed says, Kemashmoi. Kemashmoi means the Pasuk should indeed be translated literally. This is an instruction on the Dayonim in Bezdin that they have to paskin accurately. And if they do not, then they are violating this instruction of the Tzedek Tishpoi Zamitecho. But then Rashi adds, quoting Chazal, to Sifroi, the Gemara, in fact the Mishnah Berurah quotes this Lahalacha, Dover Acher, another Pirush, Haveidonet Chavercho Lekat Zuchut. You should judge your friend Lekat Zuchut favorably. We all know this is a Mishnah, the very first parak in Mesechta's Ozoi, Vahaveidon, Eskola Odom Lekat Zuchut. So Rashi tells us that there are two pirushim in this pasuk. Number one, the literal translation, the dayonim has to paskin accurately, and number two, everybody, not just dayonim, has to be dom lekatzuchus. And the Mefarshim explained, the Maral and others, that the reason why Rashi was forced, as it were, to bring a second explanation, because the word amisecho bothered him. The tzedek tishpoi amisecho. You should judge favorably your friend, your nation. Now clearly, if this is an instruction on dayonim to judge correctly, then this would not necessarily only be limited to amisecho. Amisecho means your fellow friend. If it was a dayon, the dayon has to pass in accurately for absolutely everybody. So why does the Torah stipulate only amisecho? And that's why Rashi said there must be another explanation, which is you have to judge favorably, and this indeed does not apply to everybody. Chofetz Chaim in his Sefer, Chofetz Chaim is at great length to explain to us that if you see, for example, a Rasha, somebody who is well known for doing Averus wantonly, then you do not have to be don him lekat zechus. This is a halacha that is indeed specific to amisecho. Be that as it may, we have therefore two separate translations of this pasuk. The tzedek tishpoit amisecho either means dayonim have to judge accurately, or it applies to all of us, we have to judge favorably. Now, it's interesting to note that these two alternative pirushim are almost contrary and not just different. On the one hand, you are saying that the dayon has to judge b'tzedek. And how are we translating b'tzedek in that context? They have to judge accurately. And yet when we are talking about non-dayonim, you have to judge favorably. A dayonim bezdin, can you imagine if somebody comes to bezdin, all the evidence is stacked against him, and we have two witnesses in bezdin who say that yes, he was mechalal Shabbos and his highest pila. Do the dayonim have a right, chas v'shalom, to say, well, let's judge favorably, after all, he was probably very tired, and maybe he didn't realize, and there were extenuating circumstances, chas v'shalom. If al-pi din Torah is chayav misa, then al-pi din Torah is chayav misa. There is no room for leeway whatsoever. So these two alternative explanations are almost opposite explanations. The dayonim have no room for leeway or judging favorably. They have to judge accurately. And yet we, when we see our fellow man, we have to judge him favorably. even though the evidence seems to be stacked against him, but nonetheless we'll consider perhaps after all there was, this really was excusable. Which is rather strange to cram into one word two opposite translations. The Shimshon Frau Hirsch in his Pirushar Seira says there is no contradiction whatsoever. And he explains very importantly that all of this is included in the word B'tzedek. The question becomes, however, what does B'tzedek mean? And the answer is, it depends in what circumstances. If you are acting as a dayan in a Beis Din, then tzedek means you have to judge not the person, but the act that was done. Whether there were extenuating circumstances, it's too bad. The act is considered a chilul Shabbos, or the act is considered resicha, he has to be punished there as a result. But when you are talking about outside of Beis Din, you see something that looks highly suspicious, you are not judging the act, you are judging the person. I'm not judging the act, it's not for me to punish him, I'm not a Beis Din. I'm judging the person, what's my opinion of the person. Then tzedek requires me to look at him favorably, such that there is no difference, therefore, it's not really two pshatim. Never mind, they're not contrary, they actually complement each other. One has to always view through the lens of tzedek. But tzedek in Beis Din means judge the act, no room for leeway. Tzedek out of Beis Din means judge the person. Is he a tzaddik? Is he a rasha? What do I think of him having seen him done the following? The answer is, I'm going to judge him favorably. Be that as it may, we're going to discuss tonight, Be'ezus Hashem, this second translation of the Rashi, have they done as kolo odom the kafsachus. The Gemara in Shabbos, in Daf Kuf Chof Zayin on the base, tells us the following remarkable story. Maisa ba'odom echon. The story is told, says the Gemara, of a certain individual who yorad migalil ho'elyon. He lived in the upper Galilee state. He descended from there and he found employment with a certain balabayis in the south of Eretz Yisrael, away from home for 3 years. He's not at home for 3 years as he's trying to earn his paranoia. At the end of 3 years, it's Erev Yom HaKippurim, the time he's come finally to part company from his employer, and he's about to return home. And he says to his balabayis, Henli Chori, could you please now hand me my reward, my income, from all the work that I've worked for you over the last 3 years? Surely I deserve Parnassa. And that way I can go home and provide for my wife and family. Surprisingly, the Balabais responds and he says, I'm sorry to tell you, Ein Li Mois. I have no money whatsoever to give you. Not a penny in stock. This poor worker looks like he's going to leave empty-handed. There's no money. So he says to the Balabais, Ten Li Peiro. If you don't have money, at least give me some fruit. Omalei Ein Li. I don't have any fruit either. Perhaps give me some karaka. You must have an estate, some land. Maybe that can be my parnasa, my wages. Ainly. I don't have that either. Maybe give me some animals, livestock. Ainly. Finally, maybe give me korin v'ksosos, materials, pillows, begodim, something. No, ainly, I don't have that either. Five requests. He's asked for money, for fruit, for land, for animals, and for korin v'ksosos. And the answer comes forth 5 times, ainly. So what should he do? Hifshil kelav la'choyro. He packs his bag he throws them over his shoulder. The holach lebeisoy, and he goes home. The pachei nefesh, a broken individual. 3 years of hard labor for absolutely nothing. What does he have to show for it? How is he going to provide for his wife and children? That's not the end of the story. After Yom Kippur, the Baal HaBayit takes with him 3 donkeys, laden, every single one, fully loaded, one with Michael food, one with drink, one with all types of Mine Megodim, all types of delicacies, and off he travels to his employee who lives in the north. And he arrives at his house and he says, "Here, I've brought you your wages after all." Oh, Baruch Hashem, it turns out that I didn't work for nothing. Says the Baal HaBayit, let me ask you a question. When I told you that I don't have any money, what did you think to yourself? And he said, "I'll be honest. I knew, as far as I was aware, you did have plenty of money. But when you said that you didn't, I thought, well, perhaps, remarkably, just on that day, an offer that you couldn't refuse, a business deal came up, and you invested all your money with this deal." And then he said, "Well, when I told you that I don't have any animals either, what did you think about that?" And he said, "Well, I was aware that you have plenty of animals. But when you said that you don't have any, I just assumed that probably you meant that they've all been rented out, so none of them are in fact available. And when I said that I don't have any karaka, I have no estate, what did you think then?" And he said, "Once again, I thought that all your estates have been rented out, they're not available. And what about when I told you that I've got no fruit? You can't rent out fruit, what did you think then?" He said, "I was aware that you had plenty of fruit. But when you said that you didn't have any, I was assuming that what you meant was that none of them have had maestros taken from them. So halachically they are all forbidden to eat. And finally, when I said I had no pillows or begodim to give you either, what did you think about that?" He said, "Well, I assumed that you must have just that moment have been makdish. You just dedicated all of your estate, all of your clothes to the Beis HaMikdash. So when I asked you 5 times for wages, and each time you said you don't have, I had some sort of rationalization each time." Omale. So the Baal HaBayit responded and he said, "You wouldn't believe it?" 2 words. Kach hoya. That is exactly what happened. Every single one of your explanations was 100% true. Indeed, I did have a business deal. Indeed, I rented out my property. Indeed, I had not taken my trips from my fruit. I had rented out my estate. I had been makdish my nechotim. Everything that you thought maybe was in fact exactly what happened. And the Gemara then after that brings similar stories in which you would have thought it highly far-fetched to judge somebody so favorably. Not only did he do so, but it in fact turned out that is precisely what happened. That is precisely what happened. You see in this Gemara, the Maral discusses it, that however unlikely this rationalizing was, but you see at the end of the day, it all turned out to be perfectly true. So in the rule of statistics, it's true. It was an extremely unlikely scenario. A 1% chance that the one person had invested his money, rented out his animals, been makdish his pay rate, etc., etc. So the Maral says, you see the extent. you see the extent to which you are mechuyev to be done with kaf sechus. Even if, as we said, in a bezdin, we perhaps wouldn't relate to this person in this way. But when it comes to judging his character, rather than jumping to conclusions, however likely they seem, however plausible it seems to be, look at this Gemara, the highly unlikely, the virtually impossible, turns out not just to be possible, but to be absolutely true. And this is a tremendous limud in the extent that one has to be done with kastachus. Even when it looks, for all the world, as if the evidence is against him, and when he says he doesn't want to pay me, he just seems to be squirming out, and he seems to be a gamut, yet there is a chiyuv to be done with kastachus. Let me tell you a story that I heard. The English contingent may know there used to be in London, I think now maybe he lives in Manchester, somebody by the name of Dr. Sholem Springer. Dr. Sholem Springer, if I'm not mistaken, was involved in Kirov, was also, I think, worked in a bank. Either way, he was a very popular lecturer. And on one occasion, I heard this from him. He told this over in a shir. He was asked to give a shir in an old age home in Stamford Hill, famously known as Schoenfeld Square. It was on Yom Tov, and there was a big crowd there, and he was asked on Yom Tov afternoon to give a shir. He came to the hall there, and indeed it was a packed hall. He noticed at the back of the shir room, the hall, there was standing there, as he described, a very prominent looking individual, a Rosh Hashiva nonetheless. And strangely, when he began giving the shir, every time he looked up, this Rosh Hashiva is talking to the person next to him. I can tell you, it is the most off-putting thing. And he says, it was very difficult. I'm giving this shir, and here's somebody who's supposed to be an Olam Choshev, a Rosh Hashiva. You want to talk to your friend? I don't mind, but why in the shir room, right in front of me? And he says, every time I open my mouth to speak, I look up, he's busy talking to the person next to him. He said, it was a very, very hard for me, extremely off-putting, but I managed somehow to bite my tongue. I didn't say anything to him. Would you believe it, he said, the very next day I find myself at a chatna, sitting on the very same table, guess who's there, this Rosh Hashiva. I bit my tongue once again. I'm not going to say anything to him. But it all became too much, he said, because the Rosh Hashiva, he said, in fact, approached me, and he said to me, oh, Shkoya for your shir on Shavuot and Yom Tov afternoon. I enjoyed it so much. He said, that was just the straw that broke the camel's back. And he said, what do you mean you enjoyed it so much? How would you know? What do you mean, how did I know? I was there at the shir. He said, well, if you don't mind me saying, I noticed that from beginning to end, you were just talking non-stop to the person next to you. So what do you mean you enjoyed the shir? The Rosh Hashiva said, I wasn't talking to the person next to me. The person next to me was a Hasidic Yid who only speaks Yiddish. He didn't understand English. I was translating your shir to him word by word. What a tremendous lesson in being done with Kastachus. It looked for all the world that there he was having a chat in the middle of somebody else's shir. Not only was he not disturbing the shir or not listening, in fact, he was helping somebody else understand the shir. That's the extent to which one has to be done with Kastachus. If that's not an incredible story, listen to this story. I heard this story from well-known Thomas Chacham in England, he now lives in Eretz Yisrael, Dr. Yosef Gerber, Shlita. Rabbi Yosef Gerber once told over the following story, and it's absolutely mind-blowing. This story took place on an Eged bus here in Eretz Yisrael, like so many stories take place. He said, there was somebody who clambered aboard the bus, and he began talking to the driver of the bus. He wanted to ask him where he needed to get off. But this poor individual had a very difficult time talking because he had a terrible stammer. He had a terrible stammer and he could not get the words out. There you have the whole bus waiting until eventually he's able to blurt out the question, where do I get off? Where's the right stop? And the driver, instead of answering his question, totally ignores him, closes the door of the bus, and off he drives. Now, those of you who live in Eric's control can just imagine the ensuing scene. Everybody on the bus gets involved. Everybody's busy hurling insults at the driver. You, Russia, this poor fellow, look how difficult it was for him to ask the question. Why can't you at least answer his question? And what's more, you just completely ignore him. And people sat him down. Oh, just ignore the driver. He's clearly a Russia. We'll tell you where to get off. And everybody's hurling abuse at the driver. And eventually it comes the turn, it comes the stop, and this person leaves the bus. Upon which, the driver takes the microphone and he addresses the people on the bus. And he addresses them in a stammer. He too had a stammer. And he said to them, as you can hear, I also have difficulty speaking. I have a stutter as well. And that's why, when this person asked me which stop to get off, I didn't want to answer his question. Because had I done so, I would have stammered, and he would have thought that I was making fun of him. He would have thought that I was deriding him and mocking him. So I knew that by ignoring him, everybody's going to be yelling at me and hurling abuse, and I would be highly embarrassed, and I was prepared to take that. At least this person shouldn't be embarrassed by thinking that I'm making fun of him. Absolute silence in the bus. They've all just been taught a lesson in being don lekatzuchus. I remember a number of years ago sitting in the grashul one afternoon, and in the middle of the afternoon, say, there in walked a certain individual that I happen to know. And I must tell you, he was dressed in a very peculiar fashion. A totally bizarre hat. I'm not sure if I'd wear a hat like that on Purim. It sort of covered his whole head and his ears and his back, and you could hardly see his eyes through it. It was a very peculiar hat, and as you can imagine, it did raise one or two chuckles in the Beis HaMedrash as he entered. But when I looked closely, I suddenly realized, one moment, I know this person. In the beginning, I could hardly recognize him because he was completely covered by this hat. So I approached him, I went up to him, and said, Shalom Aleichem, I haven't seen you for a long time. He said, yes, the reason why you haven't seen me is because unfortunately I'm very ill. I'm undergoing radiation therapy. And because of that, I'm extremely sensitive to any type of sunlight, and that's why I have to wear this ridiculous hat that completely protects my face and my neck and my back. And you can imagine, when I reported his back to the other people on the Beis HaMedrash, there was no longer any chuckles. One has to be don lekatzuchus. Whether it's somebody talking in a shir, or not answering somebody on a bus, or wearing a peculiar hat, you don't know. You just don't know, like we saw in the Gemara. Circumstances which seem so bizarre, so outlandish, so unlikely, turned out to in fact be exactly the case. This is the extent to which we have to be don lekatzuchus. But when indeed a person is being don lekatzuchus, what is the shayresh of this midah? Why indeed must a person be don lekatzuchus? So on its simplest level, we would all understand, because that's certainly the way we would want others to treat us. That's certainly what we would want others to relate to us. And I saw in the name of the great Mashkiach, Rebbe Yaffa, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, have you ever had, I'm sure we've all had these annoying moments, we've lost our car keys, for example, or you've lost your wallet. So what do? You first look in the drawer where you always keep the wallet. it's not there. You then look next to the drawers, I guess maybe it's fallen there, it's not there either. And you start looking in the most ridiculous places, in the bath and in the sink and places where you've never ever put your wallet in your life and you can't find it, and you go back again, maybe it is in the drawer but you just look there. Why are you considering options which seem so impossible? You just looked in the same drawer four times, why are you looking again? Why are you looking in the sink to see if your wallet's there? You've never in your life put your wallet in the sink, and the answer is, because my wallet is choshev. And it's very important to me, something that's highly important, I will literally turn the world over to try and find it. Says in Zohar Yafa, that's the way you should relate to others as well. Other people are also choshev. So therefore you should consider highly unlikely scenarios, perhaps irrational explanations to maintain their chashivus. And the Maharal explains that essentially the middle of being don lekat v'chus, the shayrish of the middle is having a lev tov. I always want goodness for other people. Therefore, I want them to look good as well. So even if I see that they do something which looks exactly the opposite, but my lev tov dictates that I will judge them favorably, such that they will maintain their standard of tov in my eyes. But I think that there is further depth to this. And if you think about this, we all know people who, for want of a better word, are just very negative people. We all know people who are very positive. But the glass which is either half full or half empty, I think we all know the half full people, and we all know the half empty people. There are those who just have a negative outlook on life in general. And people like that will invariably not be donet chaveiro lechas b'chus. Why not? Because they don't judge anything lechas b'chus. They always somehow manage to see the half-empty half of the glass. Which means that the middle of being don lechas b'chus requires a person to have not only a lev tov, as the Maharal explains, but a positive outlook in general, which will mean that we will have a positive outlook on others as well. And in fact, the Orach HaTzadikim, when he explains to us the importance of the middle being don lekach b'chus, he writes as follows. He says there was once a story of somebody who was accompanying a chacham, and they passed the field and they saw a dead animal. And this person says to the Chacham, what a terrible stench coming from this dead carcass. And the Chacham says, how beautiful are its white teeth that I can see emerging from its mouth. And the Chacham says to this individual, why did you not see the positive? Why did you hone in on the negative? And on the very next line, Yorach HaTzadikim says, that's the middle being done with Kastachot. The Orach HaTzadikim does not mean that you have to judge an animal because the chuz, certainly not a dead one. What he means to say is, it's the person who always manages to detect the stench of the carcass, he's the one who will always struggle to be done because the chuz. But the one who can see the gleaming white teeth, he will be done because the chuz, because he has a positive outlook on life. I know we've said a lot of stories tonight, but listen to the most incredible, most moving story. I heard this story. This story took place of one of the Gedolim at the time in Europe. I think he became a Rav afterwards in the United States of America, of Eliezer Silver. Rav Silver was a prime Talmid of the Meshech Chochma, the Oshtemeach, Rav Meir Simcha, and Kohen B'Divin. There was somebody in his Kehillah. It was noticed that he was not davening at all. Wasn't davening a word. He might on occasion come to shul, but he wouldn't daven a word. and they approached the Rav, and they said to the Rav, Rav Silver, maybe you can speak to this individual, he does not seem to be davening whatsoever. Indeed, the Rav approached him and said, it's been noticed that apparently you're not davening. And he said, I'm done with davening. I'm never going to daven ever again. And he said, why not? And he said, I'll tell you why not. He said, during the Holocaust years, I found myself in the camps. And people there lived a terrible, a tragic existence. And there were those who wanted to daven there, but they couldn't because they couldn't have access. There were no sidurim. But there was one individual who had a siddur there. There was one individual at the siddur, and can you imagine? He was the envy of everybody in his barrack. And people approached him, could we please borrow your siddur? And do you know what he answered? He said, no. Unless you give me your food ration here in the camp. It was too much. People couldn't possibly give up their food ration. Their measly food ration, their tiny portion of food that was supposed to keep them alive for the day, they could not give that up. And yet, he refused to give them the siddur. No food, no siddur. But there were three individuals, he said, who were so determined. And they begged him, please, please give us your siddur. We would do anything in order to be able to daven. And he refused. He would not budge. He would not budge. No food, no siddur. And they capitulated. And they gave him the food. And that way, he finally relented. And he gave them the siddur. And he said all these years later to Rav Silver, when I saw this person who could not give up his siddur, would not share his siddur with others, literally at the point of death, people were starving in front of his eyes, and he would not give up his siddur. I decided there and then, I'm never going to use a siddur again. How can somebody be so ruthless as to not lend somebody else a siddur and insist they give up on their daily, measly food ration? I'm done with davening. I'm never using a siddur again. The silver, with his great goyness, and his great Das Torah, do you know how he responded? What a shame, he said, that you are concentrating on this person with a siddur who refused to give it up unless they gave him their food ration. Why didn't you look at the three people who were prepared to give up their food ration to get a siddur? That's the way I would look at this story. Mika Amcha Yisrael. Three individuals at the point of death almost were willing to be Meister Nefesh, give up their food just so they could have a few minutes davening from a siddur. That would turn me off from davening. That would encourage me to daven with greater fervor. Look at the mysterious Nefesh of Klal Yisrael for the sake of davening from a siddur. That's a positive outlook. That's looking at the half full cup of water, not at the half empty. It's true, the person who had the siddur may well be inexcusable, but why home in on the stench of the carcass when you could be looking at the right teeth? That's a positive outlook. That's an ayin tov. Somebody who has an ayin tov will indeed be don the kashrut. And really, if we were to add another line, we should say that somebody who has a negative outlook would invariably have a negative outlook on himself as well. He doesn't treat himself seriously. He doesn't look at himself positively. Remember the Meraglim? How was it that the Meraglim managed to come back from Eretz Yisrael? The most magnificent terrorist. And what do they say? Look at the size of the fruit. Can you imagine the size of the giant? How did they come back from a land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu described as Tova Imaoi, and they say it's a land that consumes its individuals? How do they have such a negative outlook? And the answer is, remember the pasuk in which they said there were huge giants We were in our own eyes like locusts. Because we had a negative outlook on ourselves. They were not machshim themselves. They didn't consider themselves as anything worthwhile. We were in our own eyes kachagomim. Somebody who judges others unfavorably, as we said, it's because he has a negative outlook on life, he has a negative outlook upon himself. And that's where this middle starts. If somebody would only be machshiv himself and have a positive look at his own koichos and his own tafkid, then you'd have a positive outlook in general and therefore would consider others positively as well. Let's just conclude by quoting the line of the Gemara that we didn't mention before. Because in the Gemara that we mentioned the story in which the wages were initially not forthcoming and eventually they were, and he said, you were don mi lakaf tzuchus, and he gave him a bracha. And he said, just as you judged me favorably, so too HaKadosh Baruch Hu should judge you favorably as well. That was the bracha he gave him. It was a beautiful bracha. But does that make sense? We have to judge others favorably because at the end of the day we don't know the truth. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Yedea Talumos Kolev. He knows. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how can HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What does that mean? The Lashon of the Gemara is Keshem Shedantuni Lekas Tuchos Amokoyim Yodin Eschem Lekas Tuchos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will judge you favorably. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the truth. And the explanation I once heard, and this is a frightening explanation, I saw it again this week, actually in the name of the Baal Shem Tov. We all remember the story with David HaMelech. David HaMelech took the wife of Uriah HaChiti, Bathsheba. The Novi, Nathan HaNovi, approaches him and he does not give him direct rebuke. What does he say to him? He gives him a whole moshel. There's the poor man and the rich man. The poor man has no sheep. The rich man has plenty of sheep. There's somebody who comes to town, he visits the poor man, he visits the rich man, and he takes the poor man's sole sheep. He takes that away. And the prophet says, Don Amelech got very angry. How could he possibly take his sheep? He deserves to die. Surely the rich man had so much. If anything, he should have taken from him. To which Nathan HaNavi said the two most frightening words. Vayomer Nathan el David, what did he say? Ata ho'ish. You are that person. You took the sole wife from Uriah HaKiti. He has no other wife. You have just incriminated yourself. And David indeed responded, Chatzati Lashem. Can you imagine if the Navi would have indeed given him direct rebuke? Why did you take the wife off? So you can be rest assured that it could be justified, it could be rationalized, it could be explained, but when David HaMelech was taken out of the picture, you're judging somebody else. Oh, David HaMelech got very angry. Why would you take the one sheep from the poor man? And Nathan said, Ata'ish. Had you only judged this person favorably, ultimately you would be judging yourself favorably. And the Farshim explains, this is what will happen in the Beis Din Shomayim. They will not confront you directly. When they begin replaying the video, they will not say to you, tell me, why did you not give stock on this particular occasion? Rather, they will dress it up as a moshel. There was a particular individual who lived in Ramat Beit Shemesh on the street that you live, and he had the opportunity to give stock and he didn't give. What would you say about this? If you always have the middah of being don lekaf zechus, what would you say? He truly didn't give stock, but maybe things were very difficult for him. and perhaps he was saving up for a different soccer, and I don't think he should be punished. So what will they tell him? After Ha'ish, you are that person, and in fact you've just gone and paskened your own halacha. We're not only going to give a cheshbon, but we in fact are going to give the din as well. When he gave them a bracha, that if you were done, mirakas b'chus, then Be'ezus Hashem, you yourself will be judged the kas b'chus. Who by? HaKadosh Baruch Hu? HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the truth. No, you will be judging yourself the kas b'chus. That is the extent to which this middle goes. So as we saw, the first lesson of being done the kas b'chus is that as unlikely, as irrational as the justification might be, but sometimes the seemingly impossible, in fact, not only possible, but is in fact the reality, as we saw in the Gemara and the very stories that we mentioned. The shayrish of the middah delays tari to be machshiv others as we be machshiv ourselves, but it requires a positive outlook on life in general, but a positive outlook upon oneself. And if one indeed has that half-full glass of water outlook on life, such that he considers himself favorably, he has that positive outlook, he doesn't see the niyu ba'ineinu kachagovin, then he would have trained himself to see things positively. He will ultimately be judging others the kapsuchus, v'achamer etzim shona, he will be judging himself, l'kach tochus. I wish you all a very good Shabbos.